everybody. It's me, Joe Hilliard, and I'm, of course, with...
Aislinn Campbell.
We are sitting around the dinner table.
Yes, indeed we are.
There is an empty chair, and we are so glad you filled it with us.
We have so much good stuff to talk to you about. But first of all, we have a friend at the dinner table with us today.
That's right. There are three of us here.
Can you say hello? No? You're just going to kiss me?
A little poppy. I mean, a little puppy.
Tell us what's going on.
A little puppy named Poppy. I'm pet sitting for my mom. A little teeny tiny chihuahua. I love tiny little dogs.
And I know that your dream dog, if and when we ever get one, would be a little toy poodle. Does having her just a few hours so far accelerate things?
Yes, but it also reminds me what a pain little puppies are.
That's true. The pee inside stage.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm chasing her around every 5 seconds. I'm afraid she's going to piddle on the floor.
You and I have both had dogs. I mean, I've got stories of those puppies just chewing up the one thing in the house when they're left alone for 10 minutes that you don't want them to chew up. If we could just accelerate past the puppy part.
Right. And I'm telling you, she's a 4-pound dog. She's like the tiniest little thing. She's so cute. Isn't she great? I do want one. I want a little puppy now. I'm ready.
Right.
I think it's a really good time for us to jump right into
unanswered questions.
So we had a few unanswered questions last week, and one of them was we were talking about you using my herbs, and one of the ones that I was most offended about was rosemary.
I bought some rosemary from the store just to have in reserve, and
it makes me giggle because rosemary is so easy to grow.
Yeah, you said that last week. It grows everywhere.
Yeah, and so we did a little bit of research, and yes, in zone 8 through 10 growing areas, rosemary is an extremely low-maintenance, easy-to-grow plant. I tend to kill rosemary. Which is funny. I know rosemary grows really, really easily, but I kill rosemary over and over
again. I think
it's
one of those things where once you establish the plant, it's growing really easily.
Yeah. I think what it is I overtend and I create really good areas that hold a lot of moisture and water. Mm-hmm. And if I plant a rosemary plant in that, it's going to get too much water.
As the cook in the house, primarily, not always, one of my favorite parts of having a grower as a partner is the ability to use these things in the kitchen. I would suggest that you get to planting your kitchen herb garden.
Yeah.
Get to it.
A point I like to make whenever I'm talking to my coaching clients is most herbs are very easy to grow. Mint, thyme, rosemary is easy to grow. Basil, you could grow a primarily herb garden and have all the herbs you want. You can grow herbs in containers. I thought we were going to say herbs, not herbs.
Damn it. Now we got to start the whole episode again. Thanks for the reminder. It's herbs from
herbs,
now on.
Herbs.
But that's a good starting point for gardening, isn't it? Like a little herb garden in containers on the back porch, whatever you got.
Yeah. But one of the things you have to know about containers is that if you're going to grow a container garden, you have got to be a good waterer because containers have got to be watered more than ground growing.
They dry out faster.
Yes, exactly. So that's just a good point to keep in mind. All right. Well, speaking of natural things like growing your own herbs, you mentioned last week that you use Barkeeper's Friend.
It gets that sink gleaming white.
Yeah, but you kind of, you know, mentioned underneath your breath, it's kind of natural. And I thought you might do a little research.
And I did.
Thank you.
There are three ingredients in Barkeeper's Friend pulled from their safety data sheet.
Perfect.
Feldspar.
That is a naturally occurring.
Linear sodium dodecyl benzene sulfonate, otherwise known as DDBSA, and oxalic acid. That's Barkeeper's Friend. You mentioned that feldspar is naturally occurring. It's a group of rock-forming minerals that make up about 41% of the Earth's continental crust by weight. And this is a naturally occurring feldspar. It's the grit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. Then you've also got your oxalic acid. Now, this occurs naturally in many foods. It was originally extracted from wood sorrel, and I'm talking like in the 1750s. But you can also find it in spinach and brassicas, which means cabbage, broccoli, Brussels sprouts.
But I bet at this point they're not pulling that out of plants. They're creating a synthetic version of it.
I assume that you're right.
Yeah.
But that second one that I said, the DDBSA... Dude, I don't have a chemical degree to understand
exactly what it is. Benzene.
But it is one of the most common used chemicals synthetically made in soaps and detergents and that kind of thing. And it's a very small weight within the Barkeeper's Friend. So now that you've got that data, whether or not we want to use it in our home, because we don't bring 409 and
right.
Fantastic, and we don't bring those into our home. We don't clean that
way. Well, part of the reason why I'm trying to keep from putting into our natural ecosystems, into our waterways and all of that kind of thing, those chemicals that we're adding to things. And I realize that my little dip of toe in the water of humanity that uses chemicals
but every single house up and down our block has got all kinds of things that they're pouring down the drain.
Correct.
And every block on the town and every town right. in the country and every country in
right.
the world.
Right.
It does add up.
So I want to do my little bit of part on that
sure.
as much as I can. But for me, it's more than that. It has to do with how it affects my physical being in
right.
the house.
Right.
For me, the most important thing about a lot of those types of things
can
is,
I guess?
Go ahead.
Fragrance.
That's exactly right.
Ah, I know you.
And so if we can use it very limitedly and it doesn't have a very off-putting fragrance.
This does not.
That helps.
Yeah.
So when you name like 409 and things like that, I mean, I can't handle it. I can walk into a house after someone's cleaned it and be sick. But, you know, I don't know if you noticed, or I guess you did notice because you brought it up. When I first started doing the videos that I was doing for gardening.
Yeah.
I noticed two things. One, that I was still having problems with my thyroid, and so my face just looked different than what my face usually looks like. It's kind of swollen.
The third nostril was distracting.
Right. Third. Exactly. One of the other things that I noticed was that I guess because I've been drinking a lot of coffee, because I do mostly intermittent fasting pretty consistently now,
yeah.
that I drink coffee all day long. And then one of the things that I had also shifted during the thyroid issue was drinking Cabernet Sauvignon rather than drinking beer. And what happened was my teeth started looking.
Which messed up my whole beer thing in my home. Right. Go ahead.
Well, and I went back on beer and then I'm off beer again, you know.
When you drink less beer, I drink less beer. So
that's
it's not
good
a bad
for
thing.
All of us.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because it's less sugar. And really, that's what it came down to. When it came down to it with the thyroid and health and all that stuff, a lot of it came down to just generally taking better care of myself and absolutely decreasing the amount of sugar intake I have. I had noticed that my teeth had started turning really dark. And in the videos, I want to look good.
Your smile is usually the first impression.
Sure, absolutely. And I'm already like real self-conscious about my teeth. And there's a whole nother story about my teeth that's coming
I'll
at
write
some point.
That story down for a future episode.
It's coming because Aislinn. You can't ignore some of the things I have with teeth issues coming.
How do you spell teeth? Got it.
So I did some research and I'm technically a wellness advocate for doTERRA, which means if I want to sell doTERRA, I can. I haven't really
yeah.
chased that down too much, but I've been using doTERRA essential oil products for at least 5 years. And what I learned is that a lot of people that use doTERRA would do lemon and lime drops, essential oil drops, in baking soda. And then that's what they would use to scrub their teeth with. So I did that and I hadn't even told you. And you were like, have you done something different to your teeth? They look white.
I thought that you'd brighter. I knew that you hadn't gone to the dentist, but it looked like you'd gone to get a really nice cleaning.
There are naturally occurring things that work as well as the chemical things that we have found. It takes some personal responsibility.
It takes some elbow grease sometimes too.
Yeah, to look into it and to find out what the solution is and to believe in it enough to like be willing to chase that down and try it out. I scrub my teeth with baking soda and lemon essential oil every other day or so now, just the fronts of my teeth. And it makes a huge difference and I'm really happy about it. And so I like to continue to try to find ways to solve problems with naturally occurring things around our home.
You know, it's a good segue into another conversation we had last week, which was about my son not having experience cooking with grass-fed beef and
right.
only having experience cooking with grocery store meat, which is 99% not grass-fed. They may have one little section because, you know.
Well, and he's already looking at the price of that meat that he's trying to buy and
sure.
going, oof, those are expensive.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. I listened to what we had said last week, and it was a primer distilled into just a few sentences. The difference between the fat content and marbleization of grocery store meat,
mm-hmm.
or even restaurant meat,
mm-hmm.
and grass-fed meat. We buy 100% of our meat from the farmer's market. Beef, pork, lamb, non-seafood. Right. There is not a seafood vendor at the farmer's market. So clearly any seafood that we obtain for our home is either caught and given to us.
Uh-huh.
Or I do go to a local seafood market to try to find locally caught drum or locally caught shrimp.
Right. I mean, we live on the coast, so we do have access to
that. It makes no sense for me
stuff.
To buy fish from California coast when I live on the coast.
Or Vietnamese tilapia, which we've talked about before.
Oof. And the idea that we can go into a grass-fed versus feedlot-fed meat is a three-hour podcast. I mean, it's an expansive subject. But the USDA, which grades and puts their stamp on the meat that you buy in the grocery store typically, has 8 quality grades for beef.
Mm-hmm.
And according to them, these are determined by, I'll quote, quality grades are based on the amount of marbling, flecks of fat within the lean, color, and maturity. So prime beef,
right,
has abundant marbling. That's their words, abundant marbling. While choice grade, the grade most commonly found in grocery stores, is high quality but has less marbling. So for the USDA, the grading is largely based on the marbling, which is what Hunter was commenting about. There's not as much fat. There's not as much marbling in this beef. So how does beef get marbled? Most cows that are consumed in America are raised the same way. They're out in some kind of pasture for about 7 to 9 months. But then after that, most conventionally raised cows are moved to feedlots.
Correct.
And you've heard the term CAFO, which stands for Concentrated Animal Feeding Operations. And what happens at these...
Concentrated Animal Feeding Operations.
And that's where the cows are kept in confined stalls, often with limited space. The cows live on those feedlots for a few months before they're brought to a slaughterhouse. And the purpose of those is to fatten them up with grain-based feeds that are usually soy or corn.
Right.
So at that 7 to 9 month where a cow can either continue eating grass until it is slaughtered or go to one of these CAFOs until it is slaughtered, that is where your marbleization comes in. They are the same prior to that point.
Yeah.
There is a movie. It's called King Corn.
Yes.
And it talks about the...
You had actually watched King Corn before you'd even met me, which I thought was really interesting.
Well, King Corn is about the use of corn in the American diet and now spreading out to other countries in the world.
Right.
And it shows that the proliferation of the corn kernel into corn syrup, corn feed for cows, corn.
Basically, we're becoming diabetics because we eat so much corn.
It literally changes the biomass of the animal, the percentage of corn in their muscle tissue food, what we would call food, is higher and goes into our body, which makes us higher. And you're right, it is one of the leading causes of American diet that has caused the obesity and the diabetes spikes that we've seen in the decades since this has become standard practice.
So even if you lay off of grain to avoid carbs or you lay off of sugar to avoid too much sugar consumption, if you eat grocery store beef, you're still eating a lot of grain and a lot of carbs.
And it's making us fat.
That's correct.
Because it makes cows fatter.
That's correct.
And more marbled. And the USDA doesn't even really grade grass-fed beef because it can't find the marbleization required to put it on their scale.
Right.
So this is not a lecture. These are just answers to a question. Why is that grocery store beef more marbled than grass-fed beef? Once these blinders get taken off about how what they are feeding us is making us sick.
Well, it's not
difficult
it's not
to
what
go back.
They are feeding us. It's what if they the USDA, are approving as
exactly.
healthy and safe for us to eat.
If the USDA scale doesn't even allow the introduction of a non-marbled piece of grass-fed beef, which I didn't mention has got much less monounsaturated fat than grain-fed beef, and which has up to 5 times as much omega-3 as grain-fed beef, and has more vitamin A and E in it than grain-fed beef, you ask yourself, if the intent of the food is to nourish you, why am I choosing foods that aren't as nourishing? And the fact of the matter is that most Americans say, if they, quote-unquote, are selling it to me, it must be healthy because they have my best interest at heart. They don't have your best interest at heart. I'm getting into lecture. Yeah. They've got the lobbyists for the beef industry.
Well, and not only that, but they've trained us to look for the most marbling. And so if they've trained us to do that, then they have to provide that to us. And a cow is a ruminant. which means, and here, that might be an unanswered question that we need to pull out next week, but food, what a cow lives on, is green, grass, not grain, not sugar, not starch. And so not only does the cow become obese, but the cow also gets viruses and pathogens easier, just like we do when we're obese and diabetic.
You mean the cow is eating food that's lowering its immune system?
Correct. And so because of that, and then because they're confined in animal operations, they catch viruses from each other and from the birds that fly by and shit on things. And then the farmer or the facility manager has to inject the animal with antibiotics. And now you're eating also on top of things that potentially could create problems in your body. It means that we're more resistant to antibiotics.
We need to put a lecture alert at the top of this episode. Lecture alert.
It's not even a lecture. It's just information. And you can choose. You can choose. There are two roads.
There are two roads.
You can choose whichever road you choose. And listen to me.
We don't care which one you choose.
Listen to me. Do you know what I fight for more than anything else?
Your right to party?
Well, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Freedom. Freedom. Do you know what freedom means? Freedom means I can tell you, I can speak about, I can share anything I choose to share with you, and you can choose to follow along, or you can choose to do something completely different. But that's your choice, and you have the right to make that choice. And I am all about that. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm not going to give you the information that I have, because you might change your mind. You might not change your mind. That's okay. You might not feel like you have the ability to change your mind. Maybe we could learn some information from each other about making it more affordable, more accessible, which is ultimately all I've ever done with all of this whole thing is let me make it more affordable and more accessible for you so that if you choose, then you can have it available.
Unanswered question. Did you finish your 4th of July videos?
No. Do you know why? Because my videos didn't come across as high enough quality videos. I just can't even use them.
You getting frustrated?
You know me well enough to know that every crisis is an opportunity. And so it's not working. Okay, I have something to learn and I'm going to figure it out and I'm going to get better. You know, some of the stuff that I'm putting out right now, it's Bush League, but that's okay because my Bush League gets better every day, every single day. I have an unanswered question.
What?
Did you complete the 5 Mother Sauce Challenge?
I did.
You did?
And for all of our loyal listeners that have been following along through the 5 Mother Sauce Challenge, and if you don't know what we're talking about because you're a new listener, if you go back to the last 10 or so episodes, we decided that we should do all 5 mother sauces. And I won't go depth into all of it, but the 5th and final mother sauce in our challenge is the tomate sauce. This is a roux plus tomatoes.
And you know what? I was not looking forward to the tomate sauce.
I knew that you weren't, so let me tell you what I did. I could have made a thick, rich bolognese sauce or a thick, rich marinara to put over pasta, and everyone in the house would have loved it except for you.
I think I like bolognese over marinara. Marinara? Marinara?
I did a penne a la vodka.
It was so good. Everybody loved
it. Now, this is a dish that I have, A, never made before, but B, have certainly had in a restaurant from time to time. I didn't really know what I was ordering when it's on the menu as just a tomato sauce with penne pasta.
Please, 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 please put it in the rotation. It was so freaking good. Lily ate it cold the next day and didn't even question it.
So I made a roux with my flour and my butter. And then instead of adding a broth to make one of the other sauces,
you add vodka?
You add tomatoes.
Oh.
And I cooked it down until basically I had a tomato paste.
Oh, that's right. I remember coming in and seeing that.
What is that?
Yeah. That was cool. It was really cool.
And then I could set it aside while I did my other cooking. And then when it was time to finish that sauce, you bring it back and then you add in 2 tablespoons of vodka. Not a lot. You cook that. You're getting the alcohol out, but you're keeping that essential flavor of the vodka. And then you're adding cream.
Uh-huh.
And then over here, you cook your penne, get it done, add it all together, and then throw in a crap load of Parmesan cheese.
Uh-huh.
I accidentally made a ton of it.
I loved it.
And it was a Bob Ross happy accident that I had because it was the most popular thing I've made in this house in a very long time. It was a side dish to a good old-fashioned Instant Pot pot roast. And some fried okra.
Because okra is what's coming out of the garden
right now.
Okra is
what's coming out of the garden. And our favorite way, let's not even lie, our favorite way to eat okra is fried.
well, equal to mm-hmm. is pickled okra.
And I've always like approached a fry night as a burden. Damn it. Frying's a hassle. Frying is a pain.
It makes a mess. Yeah.
I just had to shift my thoughts here because if our favorite way to eat okra is to fry it, go forth with joy.
So go forth with joy.
I'm embracing the notion that every once in a while I'm going to fry. Yes, there'll be a mess. Work through it. But at the end of the day, the dinner table and what you present is important enough to have a burden or two.
Okra is one of those things that like most people don't like okra. All of the kids that were there that night love fried okra. And we'll eat it like popcorn, basically.
Yeah, so good. Yeah. So good.
Mm-hmm. So everyone that listened to last week's episode clearly knows that it was your birthday.
Yes, it was.
And you celebrated 48.
Yes, I did.
The times that we're in right now, celebrations are a bit challenging. Because in the past, when you had a celebration, a wedding, a baby shower, a birthday, you had a party. You got together. Yeah. You had a dinner party. You
invite everyone. The more the merrier.
Absolutely. And your celebration, your birthday celebration, my birthday celebrations tend to be events that we pull together and bring together our closest friends. And
I love a good gathering.
Our closest friends might be 20 people.
Right.
But not only are we not interested in pulling together parties, we're also really not even interested in going to restaurants.
Yeah, we're currently in our bubble.
And because of that, I was like, what are we going to do for his birthday? What am I going to do? And what I decided was, I think one of the things that could be a fun way to celebrate is to pull together charcuterie food, which I can do, clearly. I mean, that's what we did for Father's Day, and yeah. I'm very good at that, and there's not a lot of cooking that is required for that to happen. And I had already needed to make some good pesto because I have lots of basil growing in the backyard and Cuban oregano and all that good stuff. And so I decided to pull together a picnic for your birthday, mm-hmm. to celebrate a picnic.
Yeah.
And I pulled out all of the delicious preserved fruits and vegetables that we've done at the farm. And I got together some typical charcuterie like before. And I made a cocktail and poured it into kind of a secret little growler type of situation. Mm-hmm. Packed it all up in the ice chests. Yeah. I have this really cool little picnic backpack. It's a backpack that has like plates and napkins and forks and all of the like supplies, knives and things you might need.
Preloaded picnic essentials.
Yeah, absolutely. So we celebrated your birthday with a picnic.
Yeah, we went to our Bayfront area. And in case you don't know, the city we live in, Corpus Christi, they call Chicago the Windy City. But Corpus Christi is the windiest city in America, no lie.
Yeah.
And we went down to the Bayfront. Sometimes you get a calm day. That's where we would like to have been so we could look out at the beautiful marina. But my God.
Do you remember a couple of weeks ago whenever I talked about I didn't understand why Corpus Christi doesn't do more outdoor seating for food and outdoor events? And things like that. Yes. This is why we don't like to go outside sometimes when the weather's perfect, because the wind is blowing 90 miles. Okay, it's not blowing 90 miles an hour. It might be blowing 30 miles an hour. But either still, you're still having a hard time keeping your napkins on your plate.
It was a little too gusty to enjoy that location that moment. So we found an alternative location. It was your suggestion.
It was actually really cool. We have this great little place in our city that has old houses, heritage houses, where they pulled it together and made this really nice park area, beautiful houses and nice courtyards. Actually, one of my friends got married there and it was a beautiful wedding.
Yeah.
So it was super simple.
Well, do you know what a house is? It's a wind block.
Right. Agreed. And then I jokingly said, let's go sit on this really nice lawn over here underneath this beautiful pergola right next to this house. And then we'll take all these great Instagram photos and it'll look like that beautiful house behind us is like our house and we're on our nice lawn and all of this.
Right. Okay. I prefer our backyard.
Content, whatever. So
charcuterie to go. Cocktails that you'd prepared.
I made a Moscow Mule.
Yeah, and I would do want to point out, and I don't have a problem with it.
With my own mint in it, by the way, and just saying.
Very beautiful.
Herbs.
We broke the law.
Well, you know.
I've got a strange relationship with rules that don't make sense.
I think technically the law is open contain, like.
Alcohol prohibited.
Is it alcohol prohibited?
In all city parks, unless you get a permit to do it.
Oh, because I always thought it was. Keep it to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like on the beach, keep it to yourself.
The beach has different rules. No glass, of course, but it has different rules than city parks.
Well, we kept it to ourselves.
We did.
There's a really nice little Moscow Mule recipe, too. It's like you're making a punch. So instead of making one glass at a time, you make a jug of Moscow Mule.
You made a batch.
I made a batch. Exactly. And it turned out really good.
It was lovely. The wind wasn't an issue.
No, it really
wasn't. The
weather
was, we waited until the late evening because you know, it's very hot
right now. Yep. And we got there perfectly timed.
Laid out on our blankets. You spread out this spread that would have, you know, we could have fed 20 more people had they arrived to right. show up. And I appreciate it very much. Beautiful birthday dinner.
It was very nice.
And charcuterie
and,
to go.
And in the midst of that, here we are, like, we're chatting about music and we're chatting about beer and a movie, your podcast and the 100th episode. And then we start getting talking about politics.
Which is easy to do these days. It's all around you, especially if you're a social media user. All of your friends are fighting on social media about this and that.
And this is one of those situations where we actually don't disagree about politics, really. I mean, when it comes to policy decisions, 99% of the time, we agree about policy. But we don't always agree about politicians. And so we started getting into a political conversation that got a little heated. And it surprised me. It shook us. And I think that it was one of the first times you could see fear coming from both of us. Fear about the future. Fear and anxiety about what if this happens? What if this happens? And it made for a challenging end to the evening, in all honesty.
It took the evening in a direction that we wouldn't have thought it would have taken at the beginning of the evening.
But you know what? In the end, after it's all said and done, and listen, right or wrong, I won't ever forget that picnic, but it took us in a direction that began to open our eyes to what is truly our political values. Why does one or the other choose that thing? Why does one or the other support that type of concept? And I will tell you, one thing that might have been a part of the challenge of the conversation is I'm reconsidering a lot of things right now because I believe wholeheartedly in freedom as a top value. I want to make sure that when it comes to my decisions about politics, that no matter who I'm choosing, I'm always choosing freedom as a first priority.
I've got two observations.
Go ahead.
Number one, we are clearly tiptoeing through what we know to be polarizing topics of conversation in this conversation right now.
Well, gosh, if the two of us can have a hard argument, then imagine how many people we could potentially turn off.
Well, the moment,
having the, I mean, it is a dinner table conversation.
The moment
politics.
That you say the word Trump, for example, you are going to attract half of the audience potentially and repel half of the audience.
Right.
I could have replaced Trump with Biden. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I could have replaced those words with masks. I could have replaced those words with there are these words.
Right.
So it's interesting to see us try to tiptoe to talk about a political conversation without talking about it at all. Number two, I have a different point of view about what led to the consternative portion of our evening. And it's more a criticism of you, which is silly because I know that I have a part in it. But you tend to come to your conclusions. We all do. Let me start that over. We all tend to come to our conclusions, dig into these conclusions, and present them as 100% accurate. That's what I had a problem with that night without getting into any of the meat of it because we don't want to, you know, offend or affect. That was my thing.
I feel like the opposite happened.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure that you do.
Because
and I
think
like
that
you do because now we can both take blame rather than blame one other person. And
right.
We came home and I was in a mood and I said, we just can't talk about politics in this relationship. And that bothers me because I never thought I'd be in a relationship where I can't discuss politics with my partner.
And you said, because your opinion is the only opinion that matters. And what I think is most interesting about that is that I've not pushed back on some of your politics before now.
Well, we hadn't disagreed on much.
Right. So this is the first time that I've given you an opinion that you disagreed with.
Are you discussing much politics online?
No.
No, and neither am I.
You make more political statements than I do online. I don't make political statements online.
Do you feel that I do?
Yeah, absolutely.
After this podcast, will you point a couple of them out to me? Because I don't immediately understand what you're talking about.
I wouldn't say that you've done it recently because it's gotten really hard to do it recently.
I'm out. I'm not going to get into an argument with anyone about anything political this political season.
But The problem is that we as a society are politicizing things that wouldn't naturally be politicized.
We're politicizing everything.
Because
we're putting everything into a binary argument.
I talk about wellness and it becomes a political conversation.
That's right. And that one's not so partisan, but I was going to say those binary things that we're creating are immediately put into a bipartisan atmosphere. And now we're assigning opinions to a political side of the thing that don't have anything to do with the political core values of the major two political parties.
But the other thing is that we talk about a lot, and we talked about the last 2 weeks, is the idea of there's two roads. And when you say that, we are living in binary times. We are living in a time where people have to make choices. And because of that, any statement you make is choosing one of two roads. And this is funny. I actually saw somebody post something really silly. It was great. I made a post about cats. And then the response was, well, dogs matter too. And sure. Then the response behind that was, yes, but cats carry diseases. It was just like a meme and a joke that was
right
like, you
now?
Can't even post pictures of your cats without someone giving you their fact and opinion that is contrary to something that you've posted about a silly cat.
Yeah. And I'm observing rather than absorbing, which is my new favorite thing to tell you, because I know that that's a very
I'm learning to not take it
notion.
Personal.
Yeah.
And the biggest reason why I'm learning to not take it personal.
They don't even
personal,
mean it personal. They're just spewing because we spew.
Well, and the other thing we need to keep in mind with every single conversation we're having at the dinner table, with our children, online, when we call the comptroller's office, when you talk about your staff and things that are going on with your work environment, every single person is dealing with a high level of stress and anxiety and fear right now.
Every single person.
And so it is so easy to set people off. It is so easy to be set off.
People are worn down to the nub right now.
Yep.
Their fuses certainly are.
Yeah. I think that the most important part is that we're looking for ways to continue having those celebrations in the best way that we can. And just as equally as hard times can come out of social media and social media posts, the other posts that I've been running into lately, which has been hugely helpful to me, that people have been sharing around, there's been different versions of this meme. And the meme basically is, unfurl your brow, unclench your teeth, drop your shoulders, and take a deep breath. And every single time I see that, I unclench my jaw, unfurl my brow, drop my shoulders, and take a deep breath. Thank God that someone reminded me to chill the frick out.
And I know myself well enough to know that you just described me when I get in the mood, man.
Yep.
You've got that thing right between your eyes, and I can tell that you're upset. And I'm over here going, I'm not upset, bitch. Under my breath, of course. I'm like, you're not a bitch. That was a joke. Horrible joke. Here's something that I know that we do agree on.
What's that?
Taco night is awesome.
Yes.
When you tell me it's one taco night too many, I totally understand that point of view. And you had an amazing idea the other day.
Bounce back to the roast.
Pot roast.
That you made with the penne alla vodka and fried okra.
Yeah.
And you had purposefully taken that roast and split it in two. And asked Hunter, take this meat and turn it into some taco meat.
A budding young amateur chef?
Yes. And usually kind of midday you go, what are you thinking about dinner tonight? So I say, let's make nachos.
Right.
Nachos sound delicious. And it was interesting to me because you were like, you're funny. Because if I bring something up to you that you've never cooked before, or if you don't have like a predetermined image of what it is inside your head,
okay,
it's really easy for me to go, hey, let's make such and such. And then I might send you a recipe or whatever.
Sure.
And you're like, yeah, all right, cool. But if I suggest something that has a predetermined image inside your mind, you have a hard time. Like, so I'm putting
when we go to our favorite nacho place and we get nachos, it is a tortilla chip, refried beans, cheese. They put it under a heater. Everything melts, gets hot. That's your nachos. So when you said, let's eat nachos, I thought you were saying, let's emulate that.
So have you ever been anywhere before where nachos didn't look like that?
Yes, a big pile of what we ended up creating.
That's exactly right.
You nudged me in the correct
all
direction.
All you have to do is heat the taco meat up.
Okay.
Buy some beans, not refried beans.
Yeah.
Buy whole beans and let's use black beans,
okay.
not pinto beans.
Sure.
Let's use black beans. How about you make us some queso? And you promised that you were never going to make that redneck queso again.
Redneck queso, Velveeta, and Rotel.
So you've got to make queso.
Yeah.
And you've got to make guacamole. Yeah. And you've got to make pico de gallo.
Yeah.
And now we've got nachos.
Whenever we
And they were freaking delicious.
Whenever we do Mexican night, I am going to make pico de gallo. I'd like to tell you how I learned how to make pico de gallo. I was walking through a convention of some kind, a trade show. Mm-hmm. And when you go to one of the trade shows, you see these guys who they make their living going to different kinds of trade shows, and they might sell that squeegee mop, and they've got the display, and they're marking it up with crayons, and they're throwing pet hair. And you go, gosh, I really could use that in my home. And everyone leaving has got one of these mops over their shoulder, probably two, because today only, I'll give you two for the price of one.
Do you remember there were these handle things? This is a perfect example.
Yes, we owned those. We have some in our house somewhere.
You basically like hook buckets on it.
Yeah, buckets or bag, grocery bags.
Shopping bags.
Yeah. And it helps you carry 10 grocery bags.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the exact thing I thought of when you said that. Because everybody that walked out of the trade show had that freaking handle in their
hand. I walked by the Foodmaster 2000. And this is a food processor, or the one with the spinning blades, right? Mm-hmm. With a hand crank on top. The guy threw in a whole tomato, cut an onion into quarters, threw it in there, garlic, salt, lemon juice, cilantro, dumped it into this big bowl of pico he'd been making all day. You take your chip, you try the pico, you go, damn, that's just like a restaurant.
Do you think we will ever go to an event ever again where they dump pico de gallo in a bowl and people pick up chips and eat it all from the same?
I don't know. Unless, if the coronavirus comes and goes... or herd immunity, then yes. But will we ever not be on guard for some kind of unknown like this, maybe a few generations away?
The reason I believe...
They said the same thing in the Spanish flu.
Sure,
will
fine.
Will we ever...
Yes, I'm talking about in our lifetime. In our lifetime, I don't believe that we will ever be free of viruses that take out people with comorbidities.
You think there's another one?
I think that that's oh, absolutely. I haven't told this story broadly, but one of my friend's family member had COVID. They got COVID under control, which COVID is a virus that is not going to leave your body. It is a virus like chickenpox, mm-hmm. basically. But what happened was they got COVID under control and then they started fighting MRSA. And MRSA is ultimately what is causing them the worst problems, which sadly, very, very sadly, may end in death. And MRSA is methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. And what that is we take too many antibiotics. Our bodies can't fight viruses. So we catch Staphylococcus, which everyone has underneath their fingernails, in their nose, everywhere. But your body can't fight this Staphylococcus virus, basically.
Okay.
And the idea that we're going to walk into any event, any festival, anything ever again and interact with the same type of germs without an understanding.
Are you saying there won't be an ACL ever again? Ever again?
I don't know.
Of course not. But what does your gut tell you?
My gut tells me I don't know.
My gut tells me there will be.
My gut tells me
we get through this, but we don't know what that journey looks like.
My gut tells me nothing's ever going to be the same again.
Well, that's the truth.
And my gut tells me that if you have comorbidities, that you are going to constantly have to fight for your wellness in order to deal with viruses from now on.
My gut the other night said, let's make some pico de gallo.
Can we just get back to the pico de gallo, Aislinn, please?
Right. We need a lecture alert. I know we need a lecture alert. What would that be? Lecture alert. Lecture alert.
You might be triggered.
So I bought this machine. And I became a pico-making fool. And then the machine broke. And I needed to make pico. So I got my tomatoes and my onions and I handmade the pico. But I knew the recipe. Such a simple recipe.
Yes.
Then when you make your guacamole, you get your avocados. You got to squeeze them in the grocery store. And every time I do that these days, I'm like, is anyone watching me? Because I'm sure they don't want me to be handling all the different avocados. But I'm not going to just blindly pick avocados to make guacamole. I need to squeeze them. They need to have the proper amount of give. Uh-huh. So I take those avocados and you scoop out the guts. Then you throw in as much generous spoonfuls of the pico that you just made, even more cilantro, a couple squirts of lemon juice, extra salt.
Squirt, squirt.
And there's your guacamole. It's it's time consuming in the sense that you've got to now hand cut all of these vegetables, but I don't have any problem with that at all.
Do you add cream? You don't add any kind of oil or cream to your...
It depends on when I taste it. Sometimes when I taste it, I'll throw a dollop of olive oil in there if I need to, just to creamy it up a little bit.
That was one of the things before I met you that I did was add a little bit of mayonnaise to my avocado.
Oh, I've never done
my,
that.
To my guacamole.
Oh, we do that next time. I'm always up for evolution.
Well, if you're adding olive oil, it's the same thing. The concept is that you're trying to make it a little bit creamier.
Yeah,
that you're,
so it's chips.
So the way I did it was I've got my Siete brand tortilla chips on the bottom.
Grain-free.
And then I throw my black beans sprinkled around on top. Mm-hmm. And then I put my meat sprinkled around on top. Mm-hmm. And then your queso was actually, you complained about the queso a little bit. You didn't, you said you didn't like it. I thought it was fantastic.
I thought it was a little too cheesy.
Oh, no, I thought it was so good.
When I say cheesy, people are going to say, no, I like cheese in my queso.
Stringy.
Clearly, it was like whenever you get a hot slice of pizza and the string of mozzarella goes from the tip of your pizza down to the pie.
I thought that was perfect for nachos. Oh, it's perfect for nachos.
There's a crap load in the fridge.
Because
you
just like, I ate nachos two nights in a row. And it was beautiful, too. So then a glop of this beautiful guac on top, and then a glop of the pico on top, and then a glop of, we use Greek yogurt rather than sour cream because there's some health advantages to using Greek yogurt over sour cream.
I have a COVID story about Greek yogurt.
Go ahead.
I went to go buy kombucha at the farmer's market. Kombucha is fermented tea. And the guy that owns the place that makes the kombucha, that sells you the kombucha, loves to talk. And he was telling me that he had read an article. I asked him to send it to me. That when they map the biggest parts of the COVID growth on a global scale and try to extrapolate diet data on top of it, that the places that are having the most success with lack of growth, transmission, are those that eat fermented vegetables.
Of course, because they have great gut biomes.
Which is going to help you fight off any kind of foreign invader.
Exactly.
And that kombucha qualifies, and that the Greeks are doing great health-wise because of Greek yogurt and all of the material that's in there that's really, really good for your body.
So what you're saying is that if your immune system's strong...
That there are different things that you can research and do to make your entire health and immune system stronger.
I think that's a fantastic idea. We should learn more about that.
I don't think that it's a bad idea at all. In fact, I think that it's a critical time for a community like ours that has some really bad health statistics to begin thinking about on a community scale how we can be a healthier community. In the meantime, since we don't have any control over that, you can only be responsible for yourself.
I'm responsible for myself, and that's what matters.
But I think that tacos that evening would have been just as fine. I mean, tacos to me are superior to nachos.
No.
You go out to a Mexican food restaurant and you're going to eat anything on there, you're going to tell me that nachos are superior to tacos?
Yes.
That is ridiculous. I love you and I appreciate all of the smarts that you bring to the table, but you're saying that nachos are better than tacos?
You
can pick up the entire taco. Nachos really becomes a sloppy mess at the end of the meal.
Oh, they're
tacos
so delicious.
Tacos are hand-hold. You put anything in a tortilla, it's a taco. Here, look. A shoe taco right here. Here
no,
it is.
I'm not eating your shoe taco.
Eat it.
I'm not eating your shoe taco.
Extra spicy.
When I go to...
Easy to eat.
Freebirds, the Freebirds thing, I don't know.
They make burritos.
Freebirds is kind of a Texas thing. It's a California, Texas thing. Mm-hmm. It's similar to Chipotle.
Sure.
If you do Chipotle, Freebirds is kind of a similar thing.
Right.
I get the nachos at Freebirds rather than the burrito.
But that doesn't make you right. I mean, that's like you getting the inferior product at the place where they're selling one thing and you're
Why
like,
are you hollering
I'm too
at me.
Snooty. Do what?
Could you unclench your
you're
eyebrows?
You're clearly a Democrat / Republican, whichever one I don't like.
No.
It's very easy to fight about anything.
If you say tacos.
Tacos?
Tacos.
Who says that?
People say tacos.
Republicans / Democrats, the one I don't like. Whichever one I don't like, so therefore they're the cause of all my problems.
It's not tacos, it's tacos. And it's not guacamole, it's guacamole. And it's not quesadillas.
Oh no, it's not that.
It's quesadillas.
I have an idea now that the...
Herbs.
I have an idea now that the 5 mother sauce challenge is complete.
What's that? I like your ideas, by the way.
The reason why we did that 5 Mother Challenge was because I had never introduced myself to that concept. although as I made those different five mother sauces, I had made some version kind of it. Mm-hmm. Really, the whole key about five mother sauce challenge is how to make a roux right. Mm-hmm. And the different ways that you can do it, the different things you can introduce to it to make it different and tasty. But it was a shortcoming. It was a hole in my culinary abilities. And I'm so glad that we did it. In fact, to make that queso, I had to make a bechamel.
I know. Right? I came in and I was like, I said, oh, you're making one of your sauces here. And you said, yes, it's one of them. Which one is it? And I said, it's the bechamel. And you said, no, it's the Chalamet. Right. Sorry, that's an old joke.
Another hole in my culinary abilities that we've discussed many times. And one of the things that I know makes you happy when it is made, but it does not get made in this house if I'm in charge of it, beans. Mm-hmm. Some kind of bean journey.
A bean journey.
I'm going to make more beans. I'm going to talk about making beans.
Well, when the wintertime comes around, mm-hmm. we should make like a five bean soup. You know, where you put a chunk of ham in it, you put some white beans, sounds some delicious. Navy beans, some red beans, all that.
You want to play table topics?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to choose the category for you. Do you mind?
Nope.
Not your mom's dinner party.
Okay.
Oh, this is interesting.
Good.
Do you believe in ESP? Yes. Extrasensory perception.
Absolutely. We call it intuition.
Continue.
I mean, I think I did when we talked about the Magical Mystery Tour, which is a couple episodes back. If you're a new listener, you should go back and listen to the Magical Mystery Tour episode.
You're not delineating then between what you're describing as intuition and what others call extrasensory perception.
It's the same thing.
So don't get on that airplane. I have a feeling that it's going to crash.
Correct. I believe in intuition. I believe in ghosts.
You believe in ghosts?
I believe there's a veil between us and the spiritual world that is just simply needs to be lifted. I mean, in a simple way. And I think currently we're in a situation where it's being lifted right now.
Let me ask you a follow-up
question. The more you believe in extrasensory perception, the more extrasensory perception you will receive.
So someone who has never had a feeling of extrasensory perception.
Everyone has had a feeling
because
of
they,
it.
It's probably because they don't believe in it.
Everyone has it. Everyone will feel things. It's whether or not you listen to it or not. And it's whether or not you believe that it's something to be listened to. But the more that you believe it's something to be listened to, it's easier to perceive.
I have gut feelings. Do I believe in intuition? Yes. Do I believe in my definition of ESP? It will require more research of what ESP is specifically defined as. Mm-hmm. I do not believe in spiritualists or mediums. I think that's all hokey.
A snake oil salesperson?
Yeah, I mean, they prove how they do. I mean, there's documentaries that show exactly how they do what these performances are.
No, you're comparing it to magic, though.
But I do believe in intuition and many of the things that you talked about.
Intuition and ESP are the same thing, trust me.
Ghosts? Not so much.
You don't believe in ghosts?
No.
Well, I don't believe in ghosts like scary creatures.
I don't believe that you die and then walk around a house that you used to live in.
Right. I don't believe that either.
Forget the sheet over the head and like horror movie crap. Yeah. I'm not talking about that. I don't believe that my dad, who recently passed away, could visit me.
Your dad's right here right now. I just felt him.
In an ethereal.
As soon as you said it.
Like a protoplasmic Ghostbusters. Oh, I don't believe in that garbage.
Yeah, but no, I don't believe in the movie antics. Uh-huh. I believe in the spirit that is beyond what I can see. I'm telling you, this is the Magical Mystery Tour. This is exactly what we just talked about. You see, you go back to the movies, and I don't go back to the movies. I go back to real experiences. I have seen and felt a ghost. I feel my ancestors all of the time. Now, I joke that every time the door flies open, the ghost of Clara Driscoll walks through our house.
And I love participating in that joke with you, but for me, it is a joke.
Fine. The idea that she's opening the door and walking through it mm-hmm. is a joke to me. However, Clara Driscoll, every time I reference her, she's in my sphere.
Are you immediately bothered that we aren't on the same, total track on this?
No, but do you remember the other day when I brought up to you the idea of guardian angels and all that stuff? And then I said that I believe that I have a guardian angel and her name is Claire.
Yes.
I 100% believe that. And I feel it and I know it. And I believe that's the reason my daughter has the name Lillian Claire is because my guardian angel spoke to me. See, you take it into the, fake horror movie shit that I don't even pay attention to.
We broke the law. Well, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Dinner Table Talks. We will be back next Monday with a fresh episode. In the meantime,
hit us up on social media, send us an email, DM us, whatever. We want to hear from you.
And we hope that you're enjoying the episodes as much as we enjoy creating them for you. While choice grade, the grade most commonly found in grocery stores, is high quality but has less marbling than prime and then down from there. Did I say anything having to do with Alexa at all?
I have no idea, but Alexa is listening.
Stop shit-talking beef from the grocery store, or I will self-destruct in 30 seconds.
You know what? This just made me think of something, because I think this is a really funny story. So the other day, I got this epiphany about something, and I got really excited about it, and I couldn't stop talking about it, and I was talking about it nonstop for like the whole evening. And I would come in and I'd be like passionately yelling at you about the da-da-da-da-da and this is what we need to do and blah, blah, blah.
Sounds like a Thursday.
And you're just trying to cook, right? You're just trying to cook. And all of a sudden, Alexa goes off. Her timer goes off and it's just going and going and going. And meanwhile, I'm still talking over the top of it. You're ignoring it. You're trying to cook and listen to me. And all of a sudden, I turn and I literally scream, Alexa, stop! Like I'm talking to a human that is annoying me.
She goes, because I don't wear a watch. Alexa, what time is it?
Yeah. It's 2:11 p.m.
And, but sometimes she'll go, it's 6:45 p.m. Have a great evening. And I'll go, thank you. But she's already turned off. Maybe she did. Anyway, okay, back to it.